Our reading this morning is from a meditation based on teachings of Meister Eckhart, a 13th century mystic. This is by Matthew Fox. Love will never be anywhere except where equality and unity are. Between a master and a servant, there is no peace. For there is no real equality. And there can be no love where love does not find equality or is not busy creating equality. Nor is there any pleasure without equality. Practice equality in human society. Learn to love, esteem, consider all people like yourself. What happens to another, be it bad or good, pain or joy, ought to be as if it happened to you. Let us now share some of our thoughts. Why is it so loud? Would anyone like to offer a thought? Jamie?
One thing that really struck me with this passage is that this church really does live this. It really is just so wonderful to come up and be part of it. And I thank you all.
This speaks of equality and reminds me of a couple of things. And one was my father had taught me at a very young age that it didn't matter if you were a man, woman, or what color you may be. Whoever can do the job was the person that was fit to do the job, and that's where equality comes in, that there was no specific of anything, that everyone was all equal in their own way. The other thing was that back in the 70s, we used to sit around and challenge each other on philosophy. We all thought we were pretty smart. And there was one girl in particular, and I should say woman, because she was very adamant about being a woman. It was all about women's rights and everything. And she was coming across very strong that women had a fight, and this had to be this, and this had to be that. And I listened to her, and she turned around and said to me, because my wife and I, we got married at a very young age, and she said to me, "What do you think the percentage should be as far as man and a woman at being married? Should it be, you know, could it be 70-30, 50-50? You know, what's your thought?" And I said to her, 100% on each way. I says, if you give 100% on each way, how could you possibly go wrong? It was the first time I ever saw her be quiet.
We all were brilliant in the 60s. Yes, we were, weren't we? We were wonderful.
Same line as Tony, years ago in talking about between a man and a woman or a man and a lady, who was the one in the couple that was supposed to man the ship, and who was the one that was to follow? I obviously am not married, and at that time still didn't have a boyfriend. So it was kind of difficult for me to say, but I did anyway. I said, you have to have a navigator, and you need to have the person that's going to man the ship. My problem with that is when you're in a rowboat and you're not on a ship, you're in a rowboat, each one has the row, and each one rows at the same time as the other one in unison, cadence. And the guy that was listening to me said that cannot be. And we got into this long, drawn-out, philosophical argument, and I maintain, even to this day, even though I'm still not married, still not in a couple, I maintain to this day, there are two of us. If we can make love together, that means there are two of us that are able to man a ship or a rowboat.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
Good morning, folks. I'm Grace. I'm here for a whole week for my grandson's graduation, and this is my church away from home, and I appreciate all the love and the warmth and just the hugs and the kisses that greet me as I come in this door. You guys are so special, and I love all of you. Thank you.
This reading is the absolute base of when I'm trying to teach the children. Right now in our society, we have so many bullies of different types. You see it on every level. And trying to get the kids to look at each other and look at strangers as another human being, as another person of God's love, versus what can I get from them or how are you going to hurt me? With love and equality, you've got to have equality first, because love, and not romantic love, well, romantic love too, but love at its deepest is accepting someone for exactly who they are, nothing more, nothing less. And when you can do that for everybody, then there's equality, because you all are the same at the core.
Thank you, Bev.
I was thinking about what a challenge this is when all the things are going on that are going on. And I remember the Sunday after 9/11, I believe we were pastor free for that period, and David Nichols delivered a message. And his message was about equality, that something, if there was equality, if people had what they needed, if they had enough food, if they had freedom, if they had these basic things that we take for granted every day, if everybody had that, this was something that would never have happened. And I was very struck that day listening to it, and that's what was brought to mind reading this. It's just, we're not going to be able to get past those things that make it so hard to love until those needs, basic human needs, are met.
I hadn't really thought about the word equality very deeply before. I think that the first thing that comes to mind is that is something to do with humor and how one kind of joke is a joke where someone is a brunt of a joke. But when we're in equality with humor, we all laugh together because we can join in the common experience that's being shared. Right? So when one tells a story of some silly thing that happened or foolishness and we join them, you know, then the humor is possible, real humor, not deprecation and not belittling and not the other kinds of things. And that kind of led me, you know, because to me, real humor is a pure joy. You know, to enter real humor is to reveal something that we might consider embarrassing, and yet by joining with each other in it, that falls away, the humiliation falls away. And we begin to, you know, laugh at ourselves. And that, you know, I was thinking even beyond that. It's like, what is this about? And I thought, you know, I think it's a root of compassion. I think compassion is that point where we hold no separation in our awareness, one to another. And so we stand in the presence of another and we join them in whatever is happening for them. And that is a kind of equality in pain and suffering, in delight and celebration. You know, the rituals of the church are based, weddings and funerals are all based on joining together in an equal place, sharing grief and sharing delight, sharing a blessing of a birth. So I love what he's doing here, and the more I kind of sit with it, the more I realize where he has been in order to come to this realization, in order to share this passage with the depth and wisdom that's in here. You know, no love without equality. Why is that? Why is that?
Thank you, John. A few weeks ago, Nancy and I watched a movie on demand, Hidden Figures. And it's a true story based on three African-American very young women right out of college who get jobs with NASA, and they are math wizards. And there's a scene in there. It's pretty lighthearted. The movie is very positive. It's a terrific movie. We highly recommend it. There's a scene where, for example, the women, they're working in the NASA lab. Well, let's say this is the room that they're working in. They have a specified colored women's bathroom. And just for example's sake, that would be located up at Bellamy Faraday House from here. And they wouldn't have to gather up their work, they're under pressure, and run up to the corner and use the bathroom and do their work while they're sitting on the throne and run back to the lab and continue working. And finally, Kevin Costner encounters one of them, and he's the manager of the operation, and he questions her, "Why are you not at your workstation?" "I had to go, and it's up there, it's up at the corner." The next scene is he's in the hallway outside the bathroom that in their building that says whites only. And he's got a fireman's axe, and it's a sign that is bolted to the wall, and it sticks out into the hallway. And he just swings that axe until the final bolt pops and the sign crashes to the floor, and he drops the axe and walks away and says, "From now on, anybody can use that bathroom." And then there's a very funny line, which I won't repeat, that he also says, but I mean, just the example of that man's love, not Kevin Costner, the actor, but whoever that manager was, showing that he wasn't going to stand for the inequality was a lesson. And that movie kind of made the two of us think, because we're children of that generation, and to think that it was that recent that stuff like that existed, it's kind of scary. And some of it still goes on.
Anyone else? Going to my authority here.
That was that equality? What do you think? You know, I learned a lot when I did therapy with married couples, and John and I did it together. And I think he learned the same thing that I learned. And the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is power. And when you get a couple that comes in and one, they're in an equality struggle, that means that one wants the power over the other one. And why? A lot of reasons. Sometimes they can't trust somebody else. You know, sometimes they've just, maybe if they just feel that that's the way it's supposed to be. Which brings me to the marriage ceremony ought to have this in it so that we hear it. So many people, you know, so many couples suffer because they're afraid to let go. They're afraid they can't trust somebody, and they have a power struggle instead of having love. So the next time that enters into any of your relationships, you might want to ask yourself why you can't trust.
This is good, guys.
I'll piggyback off of what you just said. I think I've heard as well as the opposite of love is indifference. And I think that we find in today's political environment is that there is indifference as well. Nobody wants to look at the other side, as much as sometimes the other side is difficult to look at. But they're indifferent to that as opposed to what they think is correct. And the balance is off from my point of view.
She's my sister, I can do that.
With what Louise said, it doesn't really need to be a couple power struggle. It's within family. It's within the work environments or in society in itself. Is that power struggle is immense, and it has been accumulating through the years, and this is sort of like the volcano that just is about to erupt, because these power struggles are so, even like Bev said, even our children, even the youngest of the youngest, they're still power struggles. And who is going to dominate whom, and who's going to be thrown away and who's not, is very, very difficult. That means like everything in our societies are, and I don't believe throughout the rest of the world, but I think that in the industrial world, this is it. This is really it.
Formidable subject. I thought it was interesting because you know, in church we talk a lot about, especially we talk about Jesus, that Jesus talked about love, like love your enemies and pray for those who hurt you and persecute you. And he's the one that said, don't judge and you won't be judged. You know, don't worry about the plank in your brother's eye, what's wrong with them, look at what's wrong with you. all those things, kind of when you listen to all those things together, Jesus was very, very, very off-center from the world in which he lived, and certainly is irrelevant in the world in which we live. Irrelevant only because it seems like it's impossible. But we can do it here in this church. And maybe we affect our children in a way that will help them navigate through their lives. But in the big picture, as Agatha just pointed out, you know, we are living in a world that is very much steeped in power struggles. Whether you're talking about politics, you're talking about international affairs, you talk about the world economy, you talk about justice issues all over the world, you talk about people being inhumane to each other, you know, the trafficking of human beings that's going on in our country even. We used to blame Boko Haram. It's happening right here in our country. There's so many things that are wrong, and they're so overwhelmingly powerful, it's hard to hear a message about love because it doesn't apply. For all the reasons you've said, power, anxieties, we judge each other, we are enemies. Oh.
Jealousy. Let's dissect it a little bit. Let's talk about it a little bit. Jealousy is what one person has, I don't have. Am I jealous of that? It's a huge, huge word and a huge issue. And it's all over the world. Why are we jealous? What makes us jealous? I try not to be. It's powerful.
And it's pretty universal. That's why you go back to the Ten Commandments. One of the biggies is don't envy what your neighbor has. You know, it goes way back then. And it goes even deeper and further in culture because each one of us is forced to identify ourselves against the others around us. You go back to Neanderthal people, you go back to the Stone Age. There was enmity between people, one who had power, one who did not. Did you ever read the book, the one about the boys, Lost Boys? Lord of the Flies. Did you ever read Lord of the Flies? Great book, unnerving. But basically, it's an experiment where all these kids land, these 12-year-olds land on an island from a plane crash, they survive, and they build their own culture. Now, these are kids that come from a very prestigious school, they have a lot of good education, et cetera, and in a matter of time, they begin to kill each other, and they isolate each other, and they have enmity with each other, and somebody who holds the horn or whatever it was has the power, and so there's a struggle to be the one that holds the power. And it just goes on and on. They replicate the whole of the society that they were too young to really be a part of when they left England. And now they are buried on this island, and that's what they do. They recreate it because it's something innate in human nature. So when Jesus is talking about love and acceptance, and we talk about equality, we're talking about rising above our human condition to allow that something more will be. We are choosing to create another way of life. An instance, a person like Gandhi was able in his own way, for all the things that were wrong with him, and he had his faults like everybody else, but he was very, very convinced that life could be different if we stopped violating each other and causing all kinds of rifts. And in fact, when you are confronted, you don't confront evil with evil. You don't fight fire with fire. You stand back in a very way and find another way to do it. He changed the whole nation. And he proved in a very real way what Jesus had talked about in the beginning. Jesus was not, I don't want to say a peacemaker. He wasn't, you know, a peacenik, peace at all costs. He was a nonviolent person. He got angry. He was disappointed with his followers. I'm sure that there's problems that went on among them. Who was the greatest? John and James. The mother wants them to be the greatest. There was all those things going on in his own company. He rose above that and asked them to rise above it. And that's what I think we are losing we have lost the battle to this world of, I want to say, it's almost demented, where whatever you feel is perfectly okay, and whatever you judge is perfectly okay, and there's never ever a question about handling it differently. I spoke with a man not too long ago who was railing about the Muslims. And he went on and on and on and on, all the things that were wrong with the Muslims and their culture, and they hate us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I said, have you ever spoken to a Muslim? Well, no, I don't know any. Well, do you think perhaps it might help? We have a tendency, what we don't know, to broad brush the whole thing and put all the same people in the same. You have a bad experience with Puerto Ricans when I was in Waterbury at St. Anne's, and the Puerto Rican people were coming from Puerto Rico and they were settling in the South End and they were throwing chairs through our windows. The kids were at night. We had a youth group and they'd throw chairs through the hall windows. I had to have policemen outside so the kids could come and go in safety, etc. It was a tough time. I went down to Puerto Rico on a four-day winter trip with two of my friends, priest friends, and we toured the whole island, and I understood why they were the way they were. When you leave, back then, that was 50 years ago, when you left the hotel strip in San Juan, and we got on motorbikes and went around the whole island and through the island into the rainforest and down the other side to Ponce and all the rest of it. As soon as you leave the major cities, Ponce and San Juan, people were living in cardboard boxes. Families on the side of the road living in a refrigerator container that somebody had left or they stole from a store or wherever they got it, but that's where they were living. Rain, hurricanes, cardboard box. Why didn't it bother them to come live 12 in an apartment on South Main Street? It's a lot better than a cardboard box. Why would they be angry? They look at what we have, and they look at where they came from, and they go, what's wrong with this picture? Now multiply that by all the nations. And if you read international news, it's loaded with stories about people living in squalor who live with the dangerous threat of some political system that's occupying them or depriving them of water or keeping them under control by not giving them food, by isolating them, and in some cases, taking them out and killing them. They live with that. We have been listening to the problem in Syria for how long? Wonderful, wonderful article in the New York Times Magazine this week that shows a picture of Aleppo after the fact. And people are living there. In the international community, what are you supposed to do? But when you come from that, when that's your existence, when the most important comments you can make about coming to America, and there was a Syrian family that was interviewed recently, having been here now for a year, they were interviewed, asked what did they like best about living in America. The husband said, no bombs. I want to talk about equality. How do they identify with us? Do any of us identify with them? When Jesus asks us to see our brothers and sisters and to live lives of compassion and mercy and all the rest of it, he summed it up. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. As the reading said, when something good happens to one, we should all rejoice. When something bad is happening to one, we should all be saddened. And that's what's missing in our world. We don't identify with each other at all. Americans don't identify with Americans. We're still living in post-Civil War South in lots of places. There are many neighborhoods that don't allow black people. We don't talk about it. We don't push the issue. But don't move in next to me. They've been here their whole lives. They're born in America. They're American citizens like you and me. They happen, perhaps, to be on the list of the deprived. We don't talk about that either. Can anybody give a good reason why any child in the United States should go to bed hungry? Can there be any rational reason except our economic structure demands it? Do we ever change our economic structure? No. Anybody that's asking is looking for a handout. It's not a handout when half of the United States working force, some working two jobs, just barely keep a roof over their head and maybe secondarily have food to feed their kids. That's the truth. This reading goes a long way. It has lots of deep roots, brothers and sisters, and I don't pretend to have the answer. But it has to somehow penetrate each one of us, at least, to understand that the person sitting next to us has a life experience that is different from ours. And what may be good for me may not necessarily be good for the person sitting next to me. And the people who live in our neighborhood, and we live in a closed community, what is good for one may not necessarily be the best thing for the other. We don't all think alike. We don't want that. We don't want a police state where everybody is qualified to do the same thing. We want freedom, then the cost of freedom and the cost of living the ideals that this country has been defended by for long, many years by a lot of people who gave their lives. It's in our hands to decide how we are going to address the reality, at least in our own world. Can't change the whole world, just this part. Think about the challenge, but most of all, think about Jesus' promise. Next week is Pentecost, and Jesus' promise was, I will send you the Spirit who will empower you to do all of those things. And I have to ask myself, am I really ready for that? Amen. Creating God, we look to you to somehow direct our attention, clarify our vision, open our hearts and our minds in a way that will allow the grace that you pour upon us to be the gift we offer one another. We have prayed before that we may have eyes that you see, so that we may see others as you do, that we may have ears to hear the plight that you hear, that we ourselves may be able to hear one another, that we may have hearts that are opened as your heart has always been open to us, that we may be able to learn to love and to have compassion and to feel for those who are with us. You call us to be people of faith, and we try. On this day, with all that has been laid out before us this morning, we ask very simply, send your Holy Spirit into each of our lives, that we may rise as you arose even from death, to share this world in such a way that everyone has an opportunity, everyone has a leg up, everyone has the essentials of life, and everyone cares about everyone else. We pray this as we remember all those in our culture who sacrificed their lives for us, and for all those who have warred throughout the centuries, in the hopes of advancing human life and the dignity of human beings. And with one voice, we cry out to you this day for peace, for love, justice, as we call you God, our Father who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever.